people were figuring out. You know, I think the more important part was, you know, playing as ourselves, not too worried about stepping on each other's toes and understanding, you know, the more aggressive that we are, the more opportunities that we open up for each other.
Book says they're figuring it out. Team USA bouncing back in a big way versus Iran. We're going to break it down.
They're really bouncing back, though.
The play-in tourney will return in 2022. Should they tweak it at all? We have opinions. You're going to be shocked. Woj just stopping by, and we're going to take a visit to the Rumorville. Oh, he's got the Woj bomb in hand. That's tremendous. It's draft week, so we're counting down the best rookie jams ever. Cancel all your plans. Your favorite show's favorite show tips now.
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Credit Karma.
Was I lying to you?
We are live from New York City. Take a look at the Brooklyn Bridge as we prepare for the NBA draft tomorrow across the river at Barclays Center. Welcome into The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here in our South Street Seaport studio, joined by NBA champ, former Olympian, all-around bon vivant.
I don't know. That word is fancier than Zach's new haircut.
Let's not go crazy. Zach,
you look
just
good.
I was just waiting.
I was like, look at Zach. I like it. Can we get a close up of
so
that?
So glad I came back in
aren't
studio.
You? That's aren't a you nice.
It's not quite the high end type, but that's nice.
Zach's been able to hide from his home setup for the past year and a half, and that's over now for you, Zach. Richard Jefferson is on the case. Of course, our senior NBA writer, the host of The Low Post, Zach Lowe. No one does the pause like you, but I do give it a shot.
You give it a shot.
I can. Let's get to Team USA, because after a disappointing loss to France in their opener, they did rebound in a big way, beating Iran 120-66. The Americans got a boost from Coach Pop's lineup changes, including Devin Booker, Drew Holiday coming in as starters, made 19 of 36 from three-point range. Now, the U.S. cannot win its group, but it is important to finish as the top number two team by scoring differential. This gets a little confusing, but I promise you it is important. The three group winners and the best number two team will be randomly drawn to face one of the other four teams to qualify for the quarterfinals in that round. Basically, if you can be that top number two team, that opens up a much easier path to the semifinals. Richard.
Yeah.
You, who has played Olympic basketball and has had some serious double-digit wins, what did you take away from the 54-point win here?
Absolutely nothing. I took away absolutely
really?
nothing. No, it's not to be disrespectful to Iran. Like, I obviously, this USA basketball team, the standard that we will hold them to is much different. But to me, when watching the France game, the thing that they were struggling most with, and I know what Pop preaches because I've been there with him and professionally and in USA, good to great. Well, the definition of a great shot for Dame Lillard is when he can shoot the ball.
Right.
The definition. And so they were passing up shots and guys were trying to make extra passes. And like Dame's like, a good shot for me is if I can get it up from pretty much anywhere.
Right.
So when they're trying to try and get great shots, you're like, Dame, you see Dame passing up shots that he normally shoots. And I think that's what they're talking about, not stepping on each other's toes. It's like the definition of a great shot for Devin Booker or Dame Lillard on USA basketball is different from the NBA. And that's what they're adjusting to.
So I'm not even going to try to do any of that math stuff about point differential and random drawings. Let me simplify it all for you. We got the best team. This is the only time I get to say we.
Right.
We got the best team.
Yes.
We should win. Yeah, there's going to be these hiccups of, I don't know how to switch, and I've never played with this guy, and stepping on each other's toes and blah, blah. That's part of the deal. Like, we don't have the continuity. These guys didn't grow up playing club together like even some of the guys on France did and all that. We should win. That said, it's not going to be easy. The days of this being easy are over. This is an old school dream team score against Iran today. We're not going to have a lot of those. France is really good. Slovenia is really good. Australia looks really good. Spain is a perennial power. It's not a guarantee that we medal, but we're going to have games where we look unbeatable, games where we look mortal. And the games we look mortal, we're just going to have to find a way to dig them out. We have the best talent still.
Yeah, well, and the one thing that, to your point about the where you seed, because we didn't play well in our pool, we ended up getting number two.
Now this is back in 2004. For those of you who don't remember,
I am a proud bronze medalist.
Did you track all this while you were playing?
I have no idea. The internet was brand new. There was no social media.
The internet was brand new?
Brand new. In 2004, it was still using AOL online. So But because we finished lower in our pool, our pathway was far harder. We had to go Spain, who was the number one overall seed because they had both Gasol brothers, all the guys. And then the number two game was Argentina. So we beat Spain in the first round, lost to Argentina. If we would have gone the other side, it would have been a far easier path. So even looking back on that in hindsight, you want to finish as high as possible in your pool because it can get very difficult.
2004, who was the best player on your team?
Tim Duncan, Allen Iverson, everybody had their moment, but Tim Duncan was tough because of the FIBA rules, and Tim Duncan famously said, what do you think about this? He's like, FIBA sucks. Those were his last parting words from the great Tim Duncan.
Well, my point was going to be that you had Tim Duncan and Allen Iverson on your team, and you're like, but they had the Gasol brothers. But
yes,
my point,
yes.
Larger point, though, is that, yes, it takes an adjustment to get used to those FIBA rules, as you're talking about, and it doesn't just take chemistry with the players between each other, but with the coaching staff. And we've talked about that on The Jump this week, about players maybe chafing a little bit under Pop's more structured system compared to Coach K when he ran the Olympic program. And you say passing up good to great. Yes, it's a good idea. We say the math problem in the NBA, 2 is more than 3, but 2 is more than 0.
Yeah.
So good shots are better than no shots, and it seems like they are figuring that out right now. We will have to see as they get through this round robin. All right, let's move over to the NBA, because the league released their key dates for next season, confirmed that the play-in tournament will in fact be back. The NBA's press release indicated the play-in will follow the same format as it did this past season. So as we take a look at some of the other key dates, you're going to scroll across your screen here. What tweaks do you want to see in future seasons, or do you wish they had made this time?
First of all, the whole thing is a home run. This is a no-brainer decision. Tweaks, look, the main plank of opposition to it is there's going to be a 7 seed at some point that is 5-6 games ahead. We saw it with Dallas 2 seasons ago. Yep. Should they be exempt? Like, they use the standings trigger in the bubble. The problem is this is a TV property. The TV networks, need to be guaranteed a certain number of games and inventory.
That haircut is not cheap.
So no, I love it.
It need to be guaranteed a certain inventory. The tweak, so I don't know how realistic that is. It's just going to be painful. And that 7th seed, when it happens, is just going to have to, guess what? Win once in 2 tries. You should still get in. The tweak I want to see, my tweak, the number 1 seed in each conference should be able to pick its opponent from the 2 teams that come out of the play-in tournament.
Why? We want it to be easier for the number 1 seed
yes,
to walk
Yes, you
over?
Do. Because if you're the number 1 seed, that means all year, 82 games, you have been the best team.
You're playing number 8.
No.
Look what we just went through this whole thing where it's like, what if Utah has to play the Lakers in the first round?
Okay,
what if Utah has to play the Warriors in the first round? If we get into that situation, Utah should be able
but
to say, you know what? We want Memphis.
You have just capsized your own argument. What if Utah has to play the Warriors in the first round? Guess what? The Warriors didn't even make it into the 8th seed.
But this is what everybody was saying.
Guess what? Utah should have been able to beat them.
I'm saying I'm all in favor of giving the teams, if we're going to say the regular season matters, and the NBA wants
I'm going to do it like Greeny. I'm going to do it like Greeny does. I'm going to put my sit up and just start drinking.
Oh, look at my fancy shoe. If we're going to say the regular season matters, then make it matter. Give the number 1 seed a different kind of advantage. Give the number 1.
You're number 1.
Give
you're
the number
home.
1 seed the margin
you get to
say
one through the
LeBron is
eight. I don't like it when mom and dad fight. So this is what I'm going to say. All right? This is what I'm going to say. At the end of the day, I understand your point. That's the one thing that I don't like about it is the 7 seed.
Oh, please. I'm just wearing your big boy shoes.
I agree, but I'm saying the 7 seed, you work for 82 games, and sometimes the 7 seed.
The number 1 side or the 7
no,
seed?
No, I'm not talking about the 1 side. I'm talking about the 7 seed. The 7 seed, in my opinion, could be a 51-win team,
right.
And all of a sudden, and if players get hurt or if something happens and you're like, hey, we could rest our players for the final 2 games to get ready for a 7-game series to really legitimately make a run at it, like that to me is tough. To be like, oh, you're the 7 seed, you have 6 more wins than everybody else, and you got to go to a play-in tournament. What if one of your players get hurt? Well, and I understand that is to benefit 8, 9, 10. That's what it's to benefit,
right.
Not the 7. And I think the 7, maybe not tomorrow, but eventually we're going to have a 7 seed that just has a bad string of luck, and that's going to be brutal.
The flip side of that, though, is that one of the cool things about the play-in tournament is it's created this race for 6 that adds a cool wrinkle to the regular season.
That, to me, was as nice a lovely surprise of this play-in tournament this past year as anything else. It kept teams from tanking. I thought when Mark Cuban said, not tanking so much, but just resting guys, but Mark Cuban said, yeah, this is going to be really hard for us to stay out of 7 because we can't rest guys down the stretch and have the final month of the season not matter. And my answer was, yes. That is the point. You've articulated the point.
But
here's what I would say. If I was going to do a tweak of what would trigger not being in the tournament, quote unquote, I think it's on the other side. So I think what they did in the bubble, whereas if you were too many games behind, you don't get that chance to play in. I don't know if we need to see the number 10 seed in each conference get this chance to make the playoffs if they are so far behind eight that there's just they're not even relevant.
Oh, don't sleep. People are going to tank if they're in the 10th to try and get to the 11th, right? I really believe if you're like, oh, we're in the 10th, we could do this. It's like, well, if we lose these games, because I think if you don't make that, then that's when the draft spots, you know better than me. So if you start losing games, because you're like, we don't really care about the playing ticket.
Then don't they do draft lottery order after, though,
After the play-in. So but if you avoid the play-in, you're in the lottery.
You're in the
lottery. It's his point.
Yes, but you're
so if you're the 10th seed and you're like, we'd rather have a lottery pick than to play one extra game, two extra games.
My changes should be adopted. Yours may be adopted. That makes no sense.
I'm with Zach on the 7th seed.
But not the number 1 seed?
No, that's a little weird.
Thank you. Let's talk to another rookie of which much is expected, the expected number 1, Cade Cunningham. Look, he has been highlighted as the number 1 pick for months and is finally here. Earlier today, he spoke with our Malika Andrews.
So it is the day before the NBA draft, and I'm here with Cade Cunningham. And Cade, you only worked out with one NBA team, the Detroit Pistons. What were your impressions of Detroit?
I mean, I loved Detroit. I think, you know, the facilities were big time. The people throughout the organization were really good people. And I think they got a lot of things going for them in the future. So definitely a good organization. If they take me, I'd definitely be happy to be in there.
Did you get a chance to explore the city at all? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I got to look around a little bit. I went to they took me to a Tigers game, which was cool. So, I mean, Detroit was a great city. The people there were showing me love. So my trip in general was just a good trip.
I saw you talk a little bit about the fact that you're not from around there, but you travel there, and all of a sudden, all of the fans at the baseball stadium are chanting your name. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot. I mean, it's a baseball game. I have, I don't think I had any baseball fans in there, but, you know, to have a different venue show me love like that, I mean, it was special for sure.
So it is the night before the draft. What are the big plans today that you just need to check off your list before your big moment?
Spend some more time with the fam. Try to, go do some fun tonight, have a good night before, and then, I'm ready. I've been ready since last week, so I'm ready to get to draft night and see what team wants to take me.
Are you someone who sleeps before big events? Like, can you knock out, or is this something you're going to be up a little bit racing?
I think I can sleep before like big games and stuff like that, but something like this, where I'm just having to sit in there and kind of hear my future. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight, but we'll see. I'm going to try to get some rest in. I'm going to try.
Who are you most looking forward to sharing tomorrow night with?
My daughter, for sure. She's not going to know what's going on in the moment, but I think, down the line, she'll be able to look back on pictures and videos and stuff, and it'll be special for her. So, to have her there, I think that'll be special for me as well.
You mentioned that you only worked out with one team, Detroit. Mm-hmm. Detroit holds the number one pick. Why should you be the number one pick?
I think, just over the years, I feel like I've shown, through my play and who I am off the court that, I can come in and elevate, the people around me and organizations, things like that. So, like I said, I feel like my game has shown enough and, I feel like I can come in and be immediate impact. And I think that's what you want from a number one pick.
So fill in the blank for me. It is my welcome to the NBA moment. Pinch me. I know I am in the NBA when I am on the court playing against blank.
I say LeBron James. LeBron James, just because, I mean, he got a Space Jam movie now, so, I mean, that's Space Jam. So, I mean, LeBron has been somebody I've been watching growing up, a lot of inspiration for me. I mean, he's been to the finals pretty much every year I can remember, so to be on the court with him, I mean, that's going to be special for sure, but definitely a good, scale to see where I'm at, for sure.
Well, I'll be wishing you a good night's rest. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
And now joining us to talk about the draft and much more, our senior NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. Welcome back, Woj.
Rach, great to be here with you. Happy draft week.
Exactly. And let's start with the draft. A couple of days ago, you tweeted that the Pistons were not, quote, fully there yet on Cade Cunningham with that number one pick. Has anything changed now that we're getting in on draft day?
Rachel, perhaps closer, but still not there and ready as of this hour to give a commitment to Cade Cunningham that he will be the number one overall pick. And listen, I still think that the Pistons are going to get there before Thursday night. But listen, this is a unique draft, and there are three players at the top of the draft who in another year, maybe even last year, would all be number one overall picks. I think Troy Weaver, the Pistons GM, and that staff just wants to keep talking through it, evaluating it. You know, I don't think it's any hesitancy they have with Cade Cunningham. I think it's really just about how good they think Evan Mobley and Jalen Green are.
Yeah, it's funny. I just left Jalen Green. We're having a conversation about that. He said, I think I should be number one, which, of course, a lot of kids think as they enter the draft. But I said, did you tell the Pistons that? He said, absolutely. So he gave them something to think about there. Are you hearing any trade whispers or teams that are particularly interested in moving up or down as we approach the draft here?
Well, there are a lot of conversations, Rachel, about teams who, you know, certainly would like to get in that top 10. This is a tough top 10 to get into. You're going to have to give up a lot. And I think, you know, we saw the trade with Memphis getting that 10th spot. Certainly a lot of teams knocking on the door with Sacramento at number 9. But I think really the big trade talk over the next couple days is going to continue to be centered around Ben Simmons in Philadelphia. Daryl Morey and Elton Brand and their front office, they've been canvassing the league to see what they can get for Ben Simmons. And they're asking for a lot, almost a Harden-esque type package of all-star player, draft picks, pick swaps. Now, that's where you're going to start. And this is a player, remember, who has 4 years left on his deal. They don't have to do a trade by the draft or by the start of next season, certainly. Right. But they're motivated to find a deal out there, and they continue to talk to teams. I don't get the sense, though, that they're close to anything, that there's anything imminent, that they have a team yet that's ready to unload the kind of assets they would like to get at this point for Ben Simmons.
So interesting. I think that will be a story for us this week, next week with free agency, all through the offseason. I do want to get back to that trade you already reported. You just referred to it. Jonas Valanciunas heading to New Orleans, Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe heading to Memphis. The Grizzlies also split up to the 10th pick in the draft as part of that deal. And are you hearing anything about the Grizzlies in particular trying to move up even higher then?
I certainly think the Grizzlies have the assets now to move up again if there's a player that they target. But how far is it worth giving up future picks? How many spots is that worth getting up in the draft? I don't think they're going to get much higher than 10th. And I think being in that top 10 allows Memphis to get a player they really like there. And someone's going to drop to them at 10 that perhaps they're not expecting to drop today. New Orleans paid a steep price to get those contracts off, to get some cost certainty. Now heading into free agency, you know, that Lakers pick next season that Memphis gets in a deal. And of course, going from 17 to 10, you know, Memphis has potentially three first round picks in next year's draft. And obviously a chance here to get a really good piece at number 10. And this is obviously a team that's already gotten in the playoffs. You know, we've seen that young core. You'll have Jaren Jackson Jr. back for the entire season next year. Memphis is really set up nicely now for the future. And New Orleans, they've got cap space now to go out and get involved with Kyle Lowry, perhaps a Spencer Dinwiddie. And if those things don't work out, they can now match an offer sheet or re-sign Lonzo Ball to a deal. So they've got the ability to kind of shore up that guard position and perhaps even get maybe more of an established older point guard in there, which I know David Griffin's wanted to do to kind of anchor that team.
And it's interesting on the Memphis side, too, when you talk about adding draft picks to their core. I mean, not only did they draft well in getting Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., the fact that those guys developed into stars early makes whoever they bring in now, they're all on the same timeline, really, which is incredible and not a position some of the other teams around the league are on. I do want to get to a non-draft item, though, because earlier today you reported Nets assistant coach Mike D'Antoni is leaving the organization. Is he retiring? Is he planning on pursuing another head coach opportunity? Why is he leaving Brooklyn now?
Yeah, definitely not retiring, Rachel. You know, he came in and helped Steve Nash, who certainly he's had a long relationship with, and helped him through that first season as a head coach. And Mike D'Antoni was a finalist in Portland for that head coaching job, I'm told. He'd like to be a head coach again, but I don't think he wants to do the day-to-day grind of being an assistant again next season, if there's perhaps another role in the league somewhere else that isn't that day-to-day full-time assistant job. Perhaps that might appeal to him. Obviously, the head coaching hiring cycle now is over for next year.
Yeah, it's so fascinating watching him and Steve this past season. Steve talking to us so much, Woj, as you know, about how valuable having Mike there was, especially when they had the transition with James Harden coming in. I know that organization wishes him well. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see a lot of you in the next 24 hours. I can't wait.
Thanks, Rach. See you soon.
Welcome back. We are indeed in our Seaport studio. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with former 13th overall pick. We're at the draft, so we got to pub your, you
not
know,
bad.
Your
not bad.
2001, yeah. And the number one pick in our hearts.
Oh, especially with that haircut.
You'd go higher in a redraft, by the way, if you did the redraft.
Yeah, damn right. I should have been.
You're top 10.
Yeah, I should have been top 10 then, but that was a whole other argument, but we'll discuss that later.
And we'll get into the story about how you tanked your draft workout with the Nets, but that's for a different time. Let's get to the NBA, the Athletic and Stadium, confirming that the league is indeed going to go ahead and implement the new rules we've been talking about for a while now, those ones aimed at reducing non-basketball foul drawing moves this upcoming season. Now, during the NBA Finals, I spoke with league president of operations, Byron Spruell, specifically about this change. Here is what he said.
Punting fouls for the situations, unnatural moves, whether it's a move to the side or launch into the defender or a leg kick, things like that that are creating that kind of contact. Incrementally, we may go to a no call and then all the way to potentially an offensive call too. And you got to calibrate that the right way. And we've been working very closely. In fact, we just had another competition committee meeting on Monday to really work through this so that we can get this moving forward. It's not per se a rule change. It's an interpretive change that would then be enforced on the court. But we try to accelerate this as close to summer league to try to implement and start that process then, because it'll be an adjustment for the players for next season.
So indeed, starting, how do you think this is going to change the game? You saw highlights of some of the players we expected to impact the most, James Harden, Trae Young, et cetera.
Well, first of all, some of the ones that we showed were actual fouls. But the thing that I don't like is that you don't protect the defenders, right? The defenders already have a hard enough job and the game is expanded. And look, basketball is still a relatively new sport. And as players get quicker, faster, stronger, they're able to kind of, you know, trick the game a little bit. And we remember Kevin Durant's sweep through that famously went through the league and then they started calling that on the ground. So I think that these are adjustments. You're going to see a ton of foul calls or non-foul calls in the preseason to kind of give players an adjustment period.
I'm sorry, producer Steve's yelling at me, but I had to look up when was basketball invented? 1891. It's not that new.
No, I'm saying relatively new, as far as like the way this game is played in the modernized version of the game is relatively new.
We don't have peach baskets in the NBA.
Not the invention of basketball is new, but like you see players that from the 1980s till right now, players are able to do, capable of doing. The format of it is far easier for guys to kind of trick and manipulate the game.
Some of those plays are just gross.
Yeah,
it's disgusting.
Yeah,
it's gross.
Yeah,
but it will be interesting to see how the enforcement goes, because RJ is right. Some of them are fouls, and some of them are legit. Some of those are fouls by the defense, and some of the stuff that looks gross is actually legitimate offense play. So, like when Trae Young goes around a screen and slows down, and somebody runs into him, he's slowing down to map the floor and see how the defense rotates. Like, that's a foul. If you run into Trae Young, now if Trae Young jumps sideways or that's gross. So this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, that's
this
a
is
foul.
A step in the right direction, but there is going to be, the enforcement is going to be tricky, and there are going to be some plays that are actual fouls that they're not going to call maybe.
That's not a foul.
That's not a foul.
That's not a foul. That's probably a foul.
Can I say while I'm here,
please,
if we're going to do all of this, all of this rigmarole, can we just get out of the game the clothesline in transition where there's a fast break and the defensive player says, you know what, I don't want to play basketball. I'm just going to grab this dude and the play stops. We want to see dunks. We want to see fast break. Look at all these. Oh, he can't jump sideways. What about the leg kick? How about the easiest thing in the world? Get that foul out of the game. It's disgusting.
It's a tactical move.
Oh, tactical. What a smart tactic.
It's not basketball.
That foul is a non-basketball play.
Trigger him a little bit.
Well, Zach, what you saw me asking Byron there is this just going to be a no call or is it going to become an offensive foul? And he said they were working on the range of that. What do you think it should be?
I think it should just be a non-call. If you're going to start now, some of them should be now. If there's I think it can be both. I think some should be non-calls and some should be offensive fouls, just officiated by the play.
True, and it's difficult, but to truly stop it, you have to make an offensive foul. If you jump backwards into a defender, if you're jumping sideways into a defender, you don't want to put it in a space where it's like, well, is it this? If you call an offensive foul, players will stop doing it. And, again, there'll be gray areas, but I think that's the best way to impact it.
And we've seen some of them called offensive. We've seen Chris Paul stop dribbling up court and dribble sideways. Like, he's been called for offensive fouls for them.
Yeah, you got to give the defender room to stop. And that's the thing that, look, we all love seeing scores in 110s and 120s. But when we get to the MVP race and we're like, look at these numbers and look at no one's ever done this. And it's like, yeah, because the numbers are overly elevated because of free throws, because of scoring. So it's hard to compare past years.
This is going to be the topic of a lot of conversation over this coming season. But this week, we're talking draft, and our Malika Andrews still over up in Times Square with some of the prospects. Let's hear from Baylor guard Davion Mitchell, currently projected to go 13th overall.
Great number.
With Malika earlier today.
It's the day before the NBA draft, and I'm here with Davion Mitchell. What is there in New York City that you're like, all right, I got to get these things done before my big moment?
Oh, that's a good question. I definitely just got to explore the city because I've never been in New York.
Really?
Yeah, it's my first time being in New York. So just seeing like everyone around the city, it looks like a great time to be here. I just got to explore the different. Also, pizza. I heard the pizza's good here. So, I mean, I'm not a pizza guy, but definitely got to try the pizza.
Yeah, you can just have one. And yeah. New Yorkers, they fold the pizza in half. So just do that and no one will know that you've never had a New York slice before. I do have to ask you about Davion Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, number 45. Right. We saw the Damian Lillard tweet during your championship run. Do you guys get confused for each other? What was that like?
Nah, but Donovan is my favorite player. Growing up, even when I went to college, and I was number 10 at Auburn, and then when I transferred, I was like, Donovan is my favorite player, so why not have his number? So I had his number, and then I ended up playing well, and everyone just saying like Donovan Mitchell, Davion Mitchell, I got that a lot. So I'm kind of used to it, but I mean, I'm blessed to just be in those conversations with Donovan Mitchell.
What are you most looking forward to showcasing that you can do on the NBA stage?
Just always, just also being my calling card, being a really good defender, just being a guy who loves to win. Just always also want to be known as a winner. So I mean, just being a dude who does everything to win, but also a good teammate. I mean, if I'm not on the floor, encouraging my teammates. So I'm just looking forward. Also, just playing against the best players in the world. I mean, it's not just playing against the top players, but every night is going to be playing different players who are going to be really good. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Is there someone who you watch tape of defensively that you try to sort of take pointers from?
Yeah, for sure. I watch a couple of people. I mean, you've seen this past finals. Drew Holiday is a guy who stood out, so I watch him a lot. Marcus Smart, Kyle Lowry, he's a smaller guy, but he's a really good defender, too, who makes plays off the ball, too, and on the ball. So those are the guys I watch a lot.
Drew Holiday once told me, if I go down as an excellent defender and a champion, then that's good enough for me. Is that your mindset?
Oh, 100%. 100% of the mindset. I mean, everyone knows that defense wins championships, and I think that's how he won the championship, because he's the best defender.
Well, and you've won a championship on the college stage. And after you did, your hometown, they gave you a key to the city. They threw you a parade. So what happens when you get drafted? Another parade?
Who knows, man. But, yeah, like I said before, I'm just blessed to have my city behind me to do that. I mean, it was a great feeling. It was also an amazing experience to get the keys to the city. I wouldn't think I was getting the keys to the city. It was like a surprise. So. And also I got my jersey retired at high school, so that was a good thing, too. So, I mean, like I said before, I don't really know what they're going to do, but I know they're going to do something special.
Well, and you had a day named after you, so maybe July 29th, that'll become something special for you in your hometown, too.
Yeah, for sure. That day, I'm going to do something for the community. I mean, just because they showed love, so I got to show love back to them. Just the right thing to do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
It's crunch time here on The Jump. The NBA announcing today that Barack Obama will become a minority owner and strategic partner for NBA Africa, handles all NBA business on the continent, as well as running the Basketball Africa League that debuted last May. How do you think Obama's expanded presence, Richard, will impact the league?
Well, I think if you look at it, especially going back to like that Nigeria win versus USA basketball, I think it's growing. You look at the influx of players, it just continues to grow the quality of players. Obviously, Giannis and all of his brothers have Nigerian roots. So I just think that Africa basketball is going to just continue to grow and to have a presence like Obama's huge.
If you want to talk to the most excited people in the NBA, talk to the people who are working in NBA Africa or the BAL. They feel like they are at the start of something really, really special. And when you get Barack Obama involved, it has a chance to be really, really special.
Absolutely, and they are absolutely right. All right, Chris Paul and the Basketball Hall of Fame will host the Chris Paul HBCU tip-off this November in Connecticut to showcase HBCU schools. It'll be a two-day doubleheader. Schools include Morehouse College, Virginia Union, West Virginia State, Winston-Salem State. Richard, he does so much for HBCUs. Of course, he is from the North Carolina area where there are a few of them. What do you think about his continued interest here and the shine that he's given?
This is so huge. This is Chris Paul. Thank you, Chris Paul. Because you know why? The NIL is going to be so huge. The name and likeness for these individuals and the fact that you're giving them a platform on a national stage and it's partnered with the NBA, I think that is going to be huge for all of them.
It's a great point. I hadn't thought of the NIL.
I got you.
It's a great point. And Chris is walking the walk.
Yeah.
Like, just walking the walk. It's not something that stopped in the bubble. It's not, he's going to continue to walk the walk like most NBA players are.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the idea, too, is that, hey, having recruits coming out of high school, why not go to these schools?
Yes.
Why not? You can get TV exposure. You can get all of NBA players tweeting and talking about. You can get all the things you can at some of the current traditional basketball powerhouses.
Yeah.
Why not? And now part of this tournament is going to be a big mover in that. All right, I want to get to the Raptors because one of the teams with a lot of choices to make this summer is Toronto, or should I say Tampa?
It's the Tampa Bay Raptors.
I really hope they get to go home this year. I really, really do. Kyle Lowry is a free agent. Gary Trent Jr., a restricted free agent. Even Masai Ujiri not locked into his contract.
That's the biggest potential free agent
signing. So, Zach, how different do you expect the Raptors to look next season?
Yeah, this is unusual where you have...
And you can hit the Masai part.
Well, we don't know. We'll just have to wait and see on that one. But it's very unusual where you have a team that has a franchise icon, still a star player with demand around the league, entering free agency and the number four pick in the draft. So we'll see what they do with Kyle Lowry. But this is a team that still has Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby. We'll see if they get into trade talks or whatever. Gary Trent Jr., I think, is a really good bet to re-sign. It's not like if Kyle leaves, they're rebuilding. They did their rebuilding in Tampa.
Right.
They got the fourth pick in Tampa. And so I just think it's going to be really interesting to see how they pivot, if they do pivot away from Kyle. They still have a team that's built to win a lot of games. There's not a lot, but a decent amount.
And you know why? I don't know. It makes it even more complex because that fourth pick, there's no point guard there. There's no point guard that they could pick and like, hey, we're going to let Kyle go. Then we're going to get a young player that's a point guard that's a high level. And then we're going to build.
Yet another reason why free agency should be before the draft.
Agreed. And so, you know, so it's just one of those things that I think this is going to be a fun opportunity to wait and see what's going to happen with the Tampa Bay Raptors.
I mean, the Toronto Raptors.
T-Dot.
The T-Dot.
Thank you. I thought it was interesting. Look, Masai Ujiri had the opportunity to trade Kyle Lowry. Right at the trade deadline, and he decided, as he said to the world, we did not get a good enough offer that was worthy of what he has been to this franchise. But he could leave for nothing now this summer, right?
I was going to say, it's not all the Raptors' decisions. It's also Kyle Lowry's decision, and he's going to have a huge amount of say in where he goes and how it happens.
Yeah, old players don't pass up on money.
Older players.
Old. We'll call him old.
Older. What do you think? If Kyle Lowry is 35 years old, is old.
He's one of the eight oldest
players.
We're
here at the Seaport. We'll be at the draft tomorrow, 3 Eastern, and then red carpet special at 5. See you then.